Welcome to your doom.
Another visitor. Stay a while. Stay forever.
Eszol Gabir úr, jelentsérék a csárdában vannak.
Kicsodák?
Jelentsérék.
És ti hová mentek? Átak a kurva anyát!
Okay, this is the Gaming Beast, and this is episode 23, I believe. Yep, it should be 23. And what do we have to talk about today? I've been playing the Blackwell series. We're starting with Blackwell Legacy, then you have Blackwell Unbound, and now I'm playing Blackwell Deception. There is a fourth game. I don't have it yet, but it's, you know, I haven't finished the third one yet. It's a pretty good game series. It's a point-and-click adventure in the style of, like, Sierra or LucasArts games. The first and the third one have the way... You know, it's made with the Adventure Game System engine. For those who are into indie games and indie game development, like, for example, I'm looking at through the ether of the internet... Looking at Critical Failure, who knows about AGS, of course. If you're a fan of old-school point-and-click games, you should check out AGS games. There's lots of games out there. Obviously, not all of them are good. Actually, quite a lot of them are pretty shit. But there is a couple of really nice diamonds in the game. One is like A Tale of Two Kingdoms I played. I really like that one. It's feels kind of like it's a fantasy point-and-click adventure game, kind of in the style of King's Quest, but less of a fairy tale style fantasy and more like a serious business kind of fantasy, if that makes any sense. Inspired by Tolkien and stuff. And it's a good game. I like it a lot. There's also remakes to popular games. Like, there is a remake of King's Quest 1 and 2, made by the same studio, and then there's a remake of King's Quest 3, made by a different studio. All three have voice acting tone, and it's really nice. It's cool if you are newer to the King's Quest games, and... To be honest, I did like the old King's Quest games, but I didn't play too much about them because, to be fair, the whole typing in a game like text adventures weren't really my thing. I didn't play too many text adventures in my life. I've actually never finished even one because, I don't know, they might have been a little bit before my time, but I did play them growing up. And back then there was this thing. The first games that were adventure games were text adventure games, which were directly that came from games like Choose Your Own Adventure books, basically game books, where you can basically you read a section of the book and then it tells you to choose a path. Like, for example, go to page 23 if you choose to go to the cave, or go to page 340 if you choose to wander on. And then it will tell you what happens. There's also other game books like Fighting Fantasy, which have role-playing aspects in them where you have an actual character that you roll out, and you can also do fighting, and you also roll to accomplish skills. So it's not all about your choice. It's also about the luck of the dice in this one. And it was a really cool introduction to role-playing to a lot of people back in the day, the Fighting Fantasy books by... Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone. Not the Steve Jackson who made the GURPS books. For a long time I thought he was the same guy, but that Steve Jackson is actually from Great Britain. The one that developed the GURPS books is from America, so from North America. So, yeah. Anyway, so you had the text adventures then, and then you had, out of the text adventures, you had the graphical text adventures, which was basically... text adventures with pictures in them, which made it a little bit more visual. And then you had what I would call the point-and-text adventure, which is like, you had a graphical representation of yourself, and you could move yourself around with a cursor, and then later with a mouse, but you still had to type in your commands. And then they basically, then you had the point-and-click adventure, which then for a long time, and to this day, is basically still the same way they do it, but now you have the 3D point-and-click adventures. Although I would say there was a resurgence of adventure games recently, it's still kind of a niche genre in the indie game scene nowadays. There hasn't been too many major releases. There has been a remake of Monkey Island, but I don't like the remakes that much because they like look a little bit too cartoony for me. And I know Monkey Island 3 was pretty cartoony, but then they kind of changed the look again. They should have probably stuck... I like the look of Monkey Island 3, even though I haven't played it yet. I don't mind that it was cartoony, really, but my issue was it just didn't feel right for some reason. But then again, I haven't played it, so I can't say. There was a Sam & Max... What they like to do is, like, a series of games where it's, like, serial, like, with Episode 1, 2, and the never-released Half-Life 3, Episode 3. I don't think there's going to be Episode 3. They said there's probably just going to be Half-Life 3 whenever that comes out. But episodic adventure games, like, for example, you had Sam & Max back in the 90s, which was pretty cool. And then you had the Sam & Max kind of like a series where they had an episode, and they were shorter adventure games, but they would be like a series. So it was kind of like a way to release multiple games in a faster fashion. There was also multiple episodic games. I remember way back when there was GameTap. You guys remember GameTap? It still exists, but it's pretty sucks nowadays. I never paid for the subscription, but way back in the day when GameTap wasn't bought up by Gameopoly or whatever it's called, this French company. When there was actually like 100 games free, they always had 100 games free, and they would switch up which games they were. And they would have, I remember, they would have also exclusively a adventure game series based on fairy tales, and made by American McGee's, the guys who made American McGee's Alice, and also I think American McGee's Oz or whatever. And they made a series, and it looked kind of like, it was a 2D game, but it kind of like flash animated, kind of like Foster's Imaginary Friends. Not a big fan of that look. I thought Foster's was kind of a cool little cartoon, even though obviously I was too old for it, but it was kind of cool, the idea. But I just didn't like the cheap flash animation, you know. I'm not saying that it was cheap or anything, but it just felt like very, very computery, you know. There wasn't, maybe it's just because of my age again, that, you know, I grew up with cartoons that were actually drawn. I know animation, I mean, I tried myself a little bit with animation. It's a long, tedious process, as the little that I've learned from it, I realized that. And I get it, you wanna speed things up, but on the other hand, it just cheapens the cartoon. So the idea was kind of cool, and you had one or two episodes, but they were kind of predictable. I mean, okay, it's a children's cartoon, what do you expect? It's kind of the same thing, but I don't know, you know. Whatever. I've been trailing off. The point is, why am I talking all about this stuff and not about the Blackwell series? Well, the Blackwell series is a trilogy, well, not a quadrilogy, of games, where the games are pretty short. I finished the... I can actually say exactly how long I spent on the games. It's pretty cool also Raptor recognized the games. I've been playing City of Heroes, and it didn't recognize City of Heroes because I have City of Heroes installed on another hard drive. My portable hard drive is kind of weird, but the reason why I do it is to save space, and it works just fine. I've been actually playing yesterday, I've been playing with Sendu and Adam the Hedgehog, because Adam the Hedgehog has been playing now City of Heroes, and maybe if I can get CF, we can get a group going. That would be really cool. Maybe other people. It was pretty fun. I've been playing a Peacebringer class. I'm curious to possibly, once we get more playing, to try out some of the paid content, possibly, but only if we're really going to get into a regular play schedule, you know. If it's going to be like a 1-2 play thing and then we never play it again, then I'm not too interested, you know. The reason why I'm talking now about City of Heroes is because I'm waiting for my Steam account to load up. I apologize. Whatever, this is a gaming beast, so if you've been listening so far, you'll be listening more. So, Blackwell Legacy, I played it 4 hours and I finished the game. And that's not long, you know. I mean, you can spend quite a long time in a point-and-click adventure game. And I didn't mind that it was short. It was kind of surprising, because the last adventure game I played, what was it, Dragonsphere, which is an old-school one and became freeware on GOG. It's been around in the Bannonware sites for years, but it's now officially freeware, so you can legally check it out. It's a really good old-school adventure game, set in a fantasy setting. Very cool setting, very Tolkien-esque fantasy setting. Okay, so let's continue. Yeah, basically Dragonsphere. Pretty good game, whatever. Check it out. I really enjoyed it, and it was just challenging enough. For me, how do you categorize a challenging point-and-click adventure game? It's about how many times you check the walkthrough. If you had to check it once, I would say it's a challenging game, but it's still manageable. Like, no. Let me rephrase that. If you have to check it once, then it has been a game where it's pretty much more challenging. It's hard to say, but it's more challenging. The more you check the walkthrough, the more challenging it is, obviously. Now, some games, adventure point-and-click adventure games, are hard because their interface are not, like, the best in the world, to say it nicely. What was that? Future Wars, Time Traveler, or something like that. It's a pretty cool game, but my biggest problem was when you wanted to interact with certain parts in the environment to solve a puzzle, sometimes you weren't close enough. Now, a good adventure game would just make you walk, your character would walk to it. Also, sometimes it was hard to get around. Other than that, it was actually a pretty decent game. Still haven't finished it yet, though, so it's just my biggest issue with adventure games is I started out, I really get engaged in the story, if it's a good story, you know. And usually it is, you know. I haven't played yet one where the story... I have played some where they're really bad, but they were just some no-name AGS games, so I didn't pay anything for it, so whatever. But it's like you can get the first couple of riddles, you know, the first couple of puzzles. And because the game is all about puzzles and puzzle solving. Not necessarily like in a puzzle game, sometimes maybe, but usually it's about you need to follow the storyline carefully and then pick up on clues and find certain objects or find certain clues, then combine them in some certain way, talk to different NPCs, whatever you have to do, and to solve the different, to continue to progress the story. And it's, some adventure games are more about the story, you follow more of the story, and some are more about the puzzles. Like, Goblins, for example, I would say is more about the puzzles, you know. The puzzles are pretty challenging. But story-wise, I don't even know if there is a real story, you know. Anyway, so I've been talking around the bush here. Let's talk about the Blackwell series. The Blackwell series, like I said before, it's a trilogy of games, and it starts out, as I said, the first game I finished in 3 hours. And that's without a walkthrough. So, I, in my opinion, this game is not really that challenging. It's a pretty easy adventure game, if you just want to finish it. Now, there is achievements to the game, and Easter eggs in the different games and whatever. There are not too many achievements, so this is a game where, like, there's 8 in total for the first game. So it's a game where you could possibly get the achievements pretty easily. Like, there's an achievement where you listen to the creator's commentary. I think David something, that's his name, I forgot. no disrespect. I think the game is cool, and big props to the creator. Let me see here. I'll just check it fast, do the wiki magic. Yeah, I know I don't have really show notes, but whatever. Sometimes I have them, sometimes I don't. It's just how it is. So, the game can be finished pretty fast. The second game, which is actually a prequel to the first game, I finished in 3 hours. And I think it was because the first one was also an introductory to the game and everything, and to the system. And the second one was... Then after that, the second one really didn't really explain to you a lot of the different things, because they assumed you played the first one. And it kind of shows, because I had an easier time playing that one through. I mean, I played in 3 hours, you know. But it also has a bunch of different achievements you can unlock. So that's a game. And I've only achieved... There's 10 in those, and I've only achieved 2. So in the other one, in the first one, I've achieved 4 out of 8. And obviously, they put in some that are harder to unlock. There's like one where the main character... What's her name again? I know the first one is... Obviously, it's Blackwell. And the character in the first and the third game... And the third one is a sequel to the first. And the second one is a prequel. It's Rosangela Blackwell, that's her name. And the second one is the aunt of Rosa, who she talks about in the first game, Lauren Blackwell. And the game is there's this woman, Rosa, and she finds out that she's a medium, that she has a spirit guide. There's this ghost he's kind of like this typical noir detective dude from the 40s or 50s, but he's like a ghost, so... And her family, the Blackwell family, the females have been usually always mediums. Her aunt, one of the females, has been a medium. Her aunt and her grandmother, or was it her mother? Her aunt's mother, so Rosa's grandmother, were also mediums, but with different success rates. Obviously, her aunt... Never know why I should say that right. It just sounds kind of stupid, but... her aunt, Lauren, was somewhat successful in what they do is not just their mediums. They help spirits that are lost in our world guide them back to the other world, you know. They don't necessarily say heaven or hell, you know, but... I'm not going to say necessarily that this game follows like a Judeo-Christian mythology, because ghosts are something and spirits are something that come up in every mythology and every religion in some shape or form. But on the other hand, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's about ghosts, and basically Rosangela is helping ghosts return to the other world, whatever it is, because it's never specifically stated how the other world looks like. It's just, you know, you have to do all these different puzzles and stuff, and then, you know, the spirit guide helps her, the ghosts, in a sense, go into her head, but they go to a realm where there is a light, and they go towards the light, and then whatever is there, they always specifically say they don't know what is there. So it's really cool, because everybody can make up their mind what that is. So I would say it's actually pretty neutral. I mean, there's spirits, there's ghosts, but there's no specific... there's one moment in the first game where you could probably argue for one that it is one specific view of this whole thing, but you could also argue back with it, you know, if you really wanted to. I'm not going to spoil it. I don't want to really talk about it too much because it's kind of hard to like talk about an adventure game without spoiling the story. It's a really cool story. You should check it out. And I would say it's... What I like about it, it's different because you have a female protagonist, which is not too often happening, especially point-and-click adventures. And the guy specifically wanted to do kind of an investigative story, but without a detective. So, and then he had the idea with the medium, picked up from a show, and then he made the game. And the game is really nicely done. The graphics are very neat for an AGS game, you know, and it feels like a professional game. Especially once you get to the third game, like, obviously you got a better budget and stuff. But still, the first game looks really nice. Well, I mean the third game. The first game still looks really nice. It plays really nice. Also, there's a cool way that, you know, you get little hints and names of different people. And then what you can do, you can go to your computer and research it. Like, you can Google it up in the story, you know. And in the second game, that plays in the 70s, and there's no internet, but you can, like, look up people on the telephone instead, you know. And it has the same function, but I like that kind of thing that, you know, you still have a telephone also in the games that are playing in our times, you know. But it's still cool, you know. And the second game is really neat, especially if you play the first game, because you get to know then the person more, you know. And this is before Rosangela is born, you know. And it's... I'm not going to talk about it too much. Like, there's interesting tidbits about that in the first game. It's a really nice prequel, and it also it will have some storyline elements that will lead into the third game, which happens 6 months after the first game in the storyline in the timeline of the game games universe. Dave Gilbert, that's the guy who made the game also. He's also known to make the game The Shiva and Two of a Kind. I don't know about Two of a Kind, but I did hear about The Shiva, which is like a adventure game about a Jewish rabbi in New York. There's actually a little cameo, apparently, in the second game and in other games, too. It seems like it's in the same universe, and I would say, why not, you know? I've seen the trailer for it. It looks pretty cool, and it's also very different because, you know, most adventure games play either in science fiction or in fantasy surroundings, or if they play in the here and now, it's usually like, you know, it's, yeah. My only gripe maybe with it that, you know, in the setting that it's in New York, because like everything is set in New York, you know. I mean, why not? And, you know, I mean, if the creator, Dave Gilbert, is familiar with New York, it seems like he was, and or he just wanted to do it because, you know, he thought, you know, every story plays in New York. There's so many cities that this could have been done in, but I guess for kind of the noir style it has somewhat, especially, you know, with the ghost that is kind of a noir style character, it does make sense. So, all in all, this is a... bundle of games that I can recommend, especially if you like ghost stories, if you like mediums, you know, like people that can talk to ghosts and help ghosts go on to the next world, and also strong female protagonists, and that are not like the typical ones that I wouldn't even say strong, like female protagonists in general that are female, like normal, you know, and they're not over-sexualized, you know. I really like the characters. They feel very normal. Even Rosangela, somewhat nerdy, she's a writer. And I really like that because that's a very big contrast to, like, most of the, you know, Lara Croft-style characters and whatever, you know. It's very much a female character as, a true female, you know. And, you know, she's still attractive and whatnot, but in her own way, you know, like, she's a girl that I could see, you know, meeting in real life. I mean, other than the medium aspect, you know, I would think she would just be crazy. But whatever. What the hell? Again, sounds from outside. Whatever. I can recommend the Blackwell series. You can get the trilogy in many different ways. You can get it on Steam. I think you can get it on GOG, too. You can get the fourth game on the website. I don't know if it's on Steam yet. Let me see. Which includes Legacy Unbound. Oh, nice. The GOG pack, the bundle, has also the fourth game. So you might want to get the GOG pack because it has all four games. And I'm kind of, you know, jealous that I don't have that because I don't have the fourth game. I have to get it separately. I wonder if Steam has the fourth game. It was released last year, so I mean, they have all three games. And I think I got the Blackwell bundle with a bundle, indie bundle thing, or I got it like in a sale. I'm not sure anymore. I don't know anything about the fourth game. I haven't played it yet, but I'm guessing it's more of the same. Maybe there's a big revelation. Oh, yeah, obviously the fourth game is available. It's nice. Nice, nice. I really like the games. It has, the first and the third game has, when you talk, the kind of Sierra style where they show a little portrait of the person when they talk. The second game, they're going to use, because when you make a game with AGS, there's two basic ways that, you know, standard ways that it's set up that you can have characters talk. It's the one way is the LucasArts way, where you have the people talk and you have text above their heads. And the other way is the Sierra way, where they talk and they have portraits next to them and the text is next to the portraits. And the second one uses the LucasArts way, which is kind of like a change, and I really like the portraits more because then, you know, I can really see the different characters because the art in the game is really nice. I really like it. What I don't like in a lot of indie games is that the graphics and the art is very poor, and they're like saying, oh, it's an indie game, we got a low budget. It's more like, I'm a programmer, not an artist. That's pretty much what it is, because, and there's a lot of really good games where they make the whole very pixelated graphics work, but here, you know, it's 2D games, but it's kind of a graphic style that, this is a game that I could see would be released in the golden age of adventure gaming. This is absolutely a game like that. The only bad thing I think about these games is that they feel a little bit too easy for me, but on the other hand, it's kind of nice to have an easier adventure game. Also, they're a little bit short. I kind of wish they would have been a little bit longer, a little bit more cases, so to speak, and just feel a little bit, you know, like, I think you could take the first and the third game, and I haven't finished the third game yet, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be that long either, but who knows, you know, I might be wrong, since I didn't finish it, I don't know, but you could take the game and combine it into one game, and then take the second game, because I really like the prequel idea, and expand on it, you know, because it kind of, like, starts with the second game, it starts, like, you know, the first one, it starts very subtle, you know, and then eventually you meet the ghost dude, and, what is it, Joey Malone, and it's kind of cool, and they explain everything in detail, and the other games, they just, like, go right into it, because they expect, oh, he played the first game, I don't have to explain, you know, and with the third one, I understand, but the second one, I would have really liked to see how Joey met his aunt, you know, and that would have been something I would have really liked to see. Now, there's a couple of other things I would have liked to see more, but, you know, maybe it's not bad that not all questions are answered in the story. I really like the story, I really like the characters. They feel like human characters, and yes, there's a supernatural kind of fantasy element to it with the ghosts and stuff, but it all these characters could work in real life, really, to be honest. You know, I mean, they're really well written. Dave Gilbert did a really good job, and I want to play his other games too now, you know, Shiva and Two of the Kind. I don't know. I think I heard of it like once. I might have been checking through AGS games. I knew about the Shiva a long time ago. I knew that it was a pay game, and that was kind of like putting me off to it. But I seen the graphics and the game and everything. It looked like, you know, if it's a pay game, then probably it's a pretty good game, you know. And you know, it's original setting, so you can ask, why shouldn't he ask money for it, you know. And that was, I've checked this out way before I ever had Steam, or even knew about Steam, even before I knew GOG. This was in a time where I played a lot of indie games, a lot of freeware games, a lot of also abandonware games. And I remember I was just checking for the next big thing, because I think I played A Tale of Two, what is it, Realms or whatever. And I was looking for another adventure game to play, because I also played the King's Quest remakes, which I think are really good, and they should be official. But since Sierra doesn't really exist anymore, I mean, the brand name exists, but I mean, the company has been bought up years ago, and the original people that started Sierra, they long have been doing other things, really. It's really sad, because Sierra really was one of the big innovators in adventure games with LucasArts, and LucasArts just kind of switched and doing just Star Wars games. Yes, they have made the Monkey Island remakes. Did they make this Back to the Future games? Because Back to the Future seems like a perfect setting for an adventure game. I would really like to play those, you know. Honestly, I wish that the old Back to the Future games were actually point-and-click adventures, because, I mean, seriously, like, Back to the Future seems like one of those movies that would be perfect for a adventure game. Not a platform game. Why does everything has to be a platform game? Not every movie and story works for a platform game, you know? I mean, it just doesn't, you know? I think everybody's, like, expecting, because, you know, they, a lot of people who are in this scene, they're more familiar, especially in the retro gaming scene. They might be more into Nintendo games and stuff like that, and console games, where it's more about jump-and-run games, platform games. There has been some attempts to bring platform adventure games to consoles. The most famous one I remember is that there has been a Maniac Mansion, which is probably my favorite adventure game of all time. I really love that game. I played actually the remake. There was a unofficial remake, and it was just slightly updated graphics, very slightly, and I really liked the game. What I really liked about it is that I loved the setting. It was this setting, it didn't take itself seriously. It was really funny. It was making fun of horror movies and old B horror movies and monster movies and old sci-fi movies, but at the same time it had a cartoony style graphic. I mean, it's amazing. In many ways, it also would have been a perfect 80s movie, you know, because, you know, in the 80s, there was a big, like, 50s, 60s retro wave. Like, we have an 80s retro wave, or we had an 80s retro wave back in the day. I mean, kind of stealthy, but we're on the tail end, if at all. And that was like a 50s, 60s retro wave, especially like with Happy Days and stuff. And there was a lot of bands doing rock and roll and stuff like that. Blues, boogie-woogie. It was really cool. And rockabilly and all these things. And, you know, the style and the clothing was in fashion. But then it combined it with like the 80s neon style and whatever. And I could have totally seen Maniac Mansion as a movie. Like, you know how cool it would have been, Maniac Mansion, with the main guy being Michael J. Fox? You could have the surfer dude who's completely useless be, Sean Penn, like his character from, Fast Times at Richmond High. You could have one of the nerds from Revenge of the Nerds being the nerdy guy. What's his name again? Fuck. See, I don't remember the names that well, but I love Maniac Mansion. I mean, what I really loved about it is that you could have multiple sidekicks, and everyone could do a different thing, you know. They had different abilities that would work, you know. I mean, you just look at the freaking And there was just so many ways you could finish the game. And it's amazing. I mean, there was a sequel, what is it? Day of the Tentacle. And it's pretty popular. But see, that was a game that I think it was first developed on the C64 and then eventually... Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, so the Scum Engine... If you don't know about adventure games, you don't know. There was a Scum Engine. It was a scripting language specifically made for adventure games. I think it was invented with A Day of the... I mean, Maniac Mansion. I find that pretty cool, actually. So that was Day of the Tentacle, but there hasn't been any other sequel since. And, some people were comparing it kind of to Rocky Horror Picture Show, Psycho, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Addams Family, and Scooby-Doo. Kind of like a mix of all of those, in a way. You know, and I think it would have been a great movie, like maybe the closest thing would be Frankenmania. What is it called? I don't know it. Well, what's that actor's name? I can't think about it. It's amazing how I can only think about his last movie that sucked. Canadian Bacon. Oh, there was Stripes. I really liked him in Stripes. There we go. And it was actually directed by Michael Moore. It was actually a fiction kind of parody movie before he got all political and stuff. John Candy, there we go. John, how can I forget a name like John Candy? Seriously. He like died right after the movie was released, or even before the movie was released. Let me see here. He was in Hercules in New York. Man. Okay. Stripes came from Spaceballs. Oh, I love movies from the 80s. I really do. You see, I don't like a lot of things from the 80s. I mean, I grew up, I was a little kid in the 80s, but I remember so many of the cool movies that aged so well, to be honest. I mean, I do like the 90s in many ways, but the 80s were just so unabashedly awesome. Where is that movie? I know that movie exists. Career of Nothing But Trouble. Where is it? I'm sorry, guys. I just gotta check this out. It's bugging me now. I might be mixing him up with somebody. Was it Frankenmania? I'm mixing some stuff up. Okay, it was called Nothing But Trouble. Right, Nothing But Trouble. Okay, you see, sorry. There is this weird little movie from the, I think, from the early 90s, 91, and it's like, has Chevy Chase and a John Candy. It's Dan Aykroyd with a lot of makeup, and also Demi Moore. Very hot-looking Demi Moore, you know. And it's about this couple, and they're this yuppie couple, this yuppie early 90s couple, and they're just driving around, and they want to get to a certain place, but they get off road, and they get to this place which it says it's like a separate country. Because you see, in Germany, it was called Vankenvania or something. And it was nominated for 6 Razzie Awards. It was kind of fun, you know, it was kind of dumb fun. I mean, if you like, you know, Chevy Chase and John Candy, it was kind of fun. Because, you know, you have these basically these inbred hillbillies kind of in a big mansion, an old freaking mansion, and they kind of take them in trial and whatever, and John Candy's playing the cop, and he's kind of like, you know, in the family, but, you know, and Dan Aykroyd is like the old father who's ruling over everyone, and he's putting them into trial, and then eventually there's the big scene where he's sending both of them, he's sentencing them to go through this big machine to punish them. And I think there's somebody else who gets actually punished, and like it's a big grindhouse, there's a big trapdoor. I always liked that as a kid. It was not really a good movie, but I don't think it's that horrible either. I mean, it's like a dumb 80s kind of comedy, over the top schlock comedy. But, you know, if you like Chevy Chase, John Candy, Dan Aykroyd, it's kind of a cool idea. It's not really Maniac Mansion, but it's kind of has a mansion in it, you know, they're going in, so it's kind of like that, but I would agree, it's kind of like Scooby-Doo and also with parodying other horror flicks and whatever, so Maniac Mansion is a really good game, I think, and point-and-click adventure, I need to play more point-and-click adventures, like, I know about so many, but I haven't finished that many yet that I wanted to. Because as I said before, one of the things that is holding me back is always that I play the game, I really get involved in the story, and then it's just like, I get stuck, you know? And you will get eventually stuck in every adventure game. The difference is how long do you get stuck. Now, with the Blackwell games, I never got stuck long, and I always said, nah, I think I can do it. You know, now I'm at the third game, I finished the first two, no problem. So I'm feeling like the third one shouldn't be a big deal either. And it's not a big deal, so I think I can finish that one too. I have now 100 minutes. So this show's like an hour and almost 2 hours, you know, into it. And I've already accomplished a lot. So, and I think this game is not so much about the puzzles; it's more about the story. So there might be some hardcore adventure game guys that would say that it's not so good because you're more following and watching a story. And it's not quite the truth, because, you know, there is, you know, you have to go through, there is adventure gaming in it, you know, it's not a visual novel by any means, but it might be a little bit easy for some hardcore players to play through all the Space Quest, all the King's Quest games, all the Monkey Island games, and so on, and like, for example, Maniac Mansion, which can be very challenging, Maniac Mansion. I mean, one of the things is like, one of the big problems is, like, you go through the rooms, you get stuck, right? There's something you know you have to do, but you don't know how to do it. And you go through every room, and you look for clues, and you look for items that you can click on. And then, when you're at that level where you don't find anything, you have to use the items that you have, maybe combine them. And sometimes, the developers were thinking of the most convoluted way to do a certain thing. Sometimes it's very straightforward, very logical, you know, the key, go to the lock, you know. You need the radio needs a battery, you find a battery, it works, you know. But then, oh no, you have to do this and that and blah, 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 and whatever. It's like, you have to understand, Maniac Mansion came out in literally the golden age of adventure gaming, where adventure games were meant to be challenging. Like, a good adventure game was one where you could sit for hours and play it for a long-ass time, maybe even for months without figuring it out. You know, you would play it a little bit, and you go away, and you come back, and they wanted you to play this for a long time. Because, obviously, it took a long time and also money to develop these games, you know. And, you know, they didn't have stuff like AG Aspect, and they had Adventure Game Maker, but it wasn't like on the C64, but it wasn't necessarily like a point-and-click adventure. It was some kind of other. I think you could make text adventures. And there's also a bunch of those, and I'm not saying that I dislike text adventures, because some can be really fun, and it's really cool because you have to imagine it yourself. But for some, for a lot of people, they will be saying, well, I don't want to read a book. But on the other hand, Jared Terrifying, you know, I mean, he got into the fighting fantasy games that were released as in a video game format on the 360, which is pretty cool, you know. So, yeah. Okay, I think I've been talking enough about games. I mean, I played also some City of Heroes. Not much to say about City of Heroes. I mean, at least, you know, I'll talk about City of Heroes next time. I want to play it more again before I talk about it again. What is up in the movie? Let's talk about some movies and shit. Nothing too much interesting. I hear Toss79, good friend of the show, he's been telling me that there was a, how you say, who was it, the guy who plays Riddick, Vin Diesel posted some tweets that, pictures of him kind of as photoshopped as Division, and he wants to play Division. Would that work? Do you guys think? I mean, he's you know, yeah, you would think, oh, he's just some meathead guy. But he's actually a big-ass nerd, too. I mean, he admitted to playing Dungeons & Dragons. And he also has a gaming company that makes games. And they made a really cool Riddick game that a lot of people liked more than the movie. So I think you can have a game based on a video, a video game based on a movie, and it actually work. And one of the good things they did is that the storyline, it was the same character in the same universe, but it was a different story. You know, it was placed somewhere between one or two of the movies, so they could do a completely separate story that would fit the video game surrounding pretty well. I think because one of the problems is they want to take the movie and the story, and they want to kind of shoehorn the gameplay with into the story's elements, and a lot of times it doesn't work. Sometimes it does work, but some stories and some movies just have a harder time transitioning into a video game. And back in the day, usually what that meant, they just meant did some kind of platformer, and it really didn't work. Then they did like third-person games. I remember Fifth Element doing that, one of the older third-person games. Not that old, but you know. Area Publishing Group. Okay, there is apparently a let's talk about role playing stuff for a while. I haven't talked too much about role playing stuff. I want to do that more. There is a company, Area Publishing Group. I got a letter from RPG Now. And RPG Now is a website where you can buy different role-playing related PDFs. You can buy a bunch of role-playing games, old released, published, or role-playing games, and also indie role-playing games, and everything in between. And it's really cool because you can get a bunch of older games that, you know, that are out of print and might be hard to get, but you can also get new and interesting games. And some of them, there's a lot of them that are better than others, because there's a lot you can like publish your own stuff, and I'm actually planning on doing so too, but there's a lot of stuff that is really not good in my opinion. But you never know, because one man's trash is another man's gold, you know. For somebody, they just be looking for a character, you know, for a cutout character, you know, pictures that they can then print out and cut out and put on, you know. And any edition, interesting, I like that. It's kind of interesting. Okay, I was just checking it out, and they've been releasing a role-playing game, the Genesis role-playing game, Area Leah Publishing Group. It's also a role-playing game and also a deck building game, like with cards, I guess, like, you know, Magic the Gathering or Yu-Gi-Oh, where players create a character deck as they adventure. We hope to get this Kickstarter project off the ground and need our fans to spread the word. If funded, in addition to print version, we also offer a PDF version of RPG Now. Yeah, PDF version for a game that has cards is not so cool, because you would have to print out all the cards and then you will have to do that. I mean, some people would do it, but I'm not quite sure. Wouldn't be bad to have a PDF book as backup, you know. Let me see your Kickstarter. There's so many Kickstarter projects going on. A lot of people are like saying that it's like an epidemic and stuff. And some, I would say, yeah, support and stuff. There's some of them I would support. Like, there's some really cool games being developed, like the new Carmageddon game. I love that they developed this. Also, a new game by the guys who made Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion, a bunch of these huge Sierra and LucasArts adventure games. They're making a new game. Really happy that they're doing that. Shadowrun game. They're making two Shadowrun games. One is an online one, another one is a single player one. And actually, I'm really happy that they're doing this. And this is that's a project that I can see happening. You know, that's a game. Now, Ouya is like something else that has been talked about in our circles and whatever. And I'm also not quite sure if that's ever going to happen, because the whole thing with the system being, you know, download-only games. We had the OnLive. It just recently failed. It just recently... no, I'm not quite sure. I think it's the project. I think it's going to be taken over by a different company, but still it shows that it's struggling. Okay, let's see with this Genesis role-playing game. It has a 15,000 goal. I don't know if that's maybe a little bit high, but on the other hand, it looks kind of interesting, and it uses cards for your role-playing game, and that's something that would be interesting, actually. This is something I could get behind. You know, there's a lot of Kickstarters where I'm having an issue, like especially, you know, the Cheetah Man 2 Kickstarter, which I think is fishy at best and a fraud at worst. The game is out there, the playable version, and just having like a disc for your collection, I think, is not worth the 50 bucks the game is going to cost, and how many the bucks. They're asking like $60,000, and you have this douchebag, this old douchebag, who's saying, "Yeah, I bought up Active Enterprises, and I'm going to release Cheetah Man 2. Yeah, he's just, you can see the fucking smirk on his face, and that he doesn't believe, and you've got the game chasers behind him, and like, I didn't like the game chasers before, now I'm like, you know, they can go fuck themselves, because they're supporting a game like that. Also, angry video game nerd, you know, even Mike Matei, you know, motherfucker Mike, you know, angry video game nerd did a little video, "Oh yeah, we have to play it, yeah," and I'm like, If Angry Video Game Nerd wouldn't have jumped the shark with the whole Robbie the Robot episode, the 100th episode, then he fucking pole vaulted over the shark right now. You know, he fucking used a jetpack flying over that fucking shark, because I don't know, like, I really like the nerd. I think I still do, but this last video with the Arnie games was really a disappointment, because it was again about, Predator for the NES sucks. Yeah, we know already. It was reviewed by other people, including the Irate Gamer, and also fucking, what is it? Total Recall sucks. Yeah, of course those suck, and that has been also reviewed, you know, and there, you know, and to be fair, he also said, you know, I reviewed already the Terminator games, but it just kind of felt like a very rushed episode, and it felt like he's just making it to have a filler episode in a sense, because he's still working and editing the movie, because who knows when that thing will come out. And I'm not such a fucking whiner or such a cynic that I'm saying the angry video game nerd has lost his mojo. But to be fair, I want to see James do movies, because I think he's a talented movie maker. Is he a good games reviewer? Not necessarily, but he did a really cool character, and he kickstarted and gave everybody the idea to do that. You know, that's what he kickstarted well. And he's always doing kind of more of a show, and he's playing in character, you know, because even he admitted, yes, he didn't like certain elements of Castlevania 2, but he still played it and still liked it, because it's a character, you know, and it's a character, obviously. And I think people, on the one hand, needs to chill down, but on the other hand, they do have a right to be kind of pissed. In a sense, because, I mean, he makes this content for free. So unless you have bought the DVDs with his episodes or sponsored his Kickstarter, you don't really have the right to complain. But then again, you have it because it's free speech, right? So I support free speech. But I feel some people are jumping on a bandwagon to bash on Angry Video Game Nerd. But on the other hand, they have also a point, you know. So I'm not necessarily on the fence, because I'm disappointed in him, but I would still give him a chance. Like, you know, I'm curious about that movie, because some people say it's going to be just a fancier episode, and I hope not. I hope it's going to be more like a proper movie, you know. I hope it's going to be epic, and I hope this will help him lead into a professional film career. Because I think seeing a horror film made by him, or a science fiction, or a fantasy, or an action movie, or a comedy, any kind of genre that he's really, you know, obviously a horror film, you know, he should make a proper horror film. That should be his first movie. And I think he said that too. And I would like to see that, you know, because if you've seen some of his other projects and some of his projects he did for the 48-hour film contest and his older movies, there is a lot of heart in that, you know. And I really liked when he did his recent video. I like his video when he just talks about other stuff, and he shows his videos he did as a little kid. When he did know one which was Nintendo versus Sega, and it feels like very much like, forget about Cheetah Man. Here, look at Nintendo versus Sega, more nostalgia, guys. And I'm like, you're kind of... I think he's kind of past his prime, and I don't like to say it because I really like his stuff, but let's be honest here, you know, I mean, when do you actually enjoy a AVGN episode? And I'm not talking Motherfucker Mike, because he does his own stuff, and honestly, Motherfucker Mike is also kind of passé. This whole angry reviewing and this whole I'm gonna spout out fuck this, fuck that constantly, and shit this, shit that, it's just getting old, and, you know, We're over the whole angry reviewing. So I really enjoyed when he was just himself talking about this video he did as a kid. But it also felt a little bit... it was informative, because like how he said the different, you know, what the hell is blast processing and what's the different technical specs. So it felt more like a true review. But I just felt it was another filler video, although a well-done one. But still a filler video just to keep his fans afloat, because I think he'll have a hard time retiring the angry video in the game nerd character, because that's what really brought him to success. That's what in many ways also kickstarted this whole reviewing games thing, because which brought it to the scene, because we had, you know, gaming reviews on TV even way back. I remember even in freaking Hungary they had those, and on TV back. Of course they were very different from what they're now, although not that different, but different in many ways. And of course one of the earliest ones that did it on the internet was Classic Game Room, you know. And you know, he's doing really well for himself, and he's a guy that he's very well, you know, he doesn't get into any drama, any e-drama, and he doesn't do, and some people were saying about the nerd, he didn't know about this, he just did it because somebody asked him, and I'm like, how don't you not check what the hell you're putting your name on? That's like your calling card, you know, your fans are the guys watching your vids and giving you money. So they're not necessarily directly paying you for your content. Some of them are because they're buying your DVDs and your merchandise and eventually your movie. But a lot of people watch it and your videos are monetized. So if you don't get the views, if people stop disliking your videos and don't watch them anymore, you're going to get less money. So why wouldn't James check what the hell he's putting his name on, you know? I mean, oh, they want to put Cheetah Man 2 on the cartridge again. Oh, cool. And like, now, I don't completely agree with Al Salieri, but he does have a point that it does feel kind of like a scam, you know? It does feel like a scam. Did James know? Because you had an apology from Mike Mattei. On the other hand, he apologized, but on the other hand, he removed the way to comment because he didn't want to have any negativity. And then you have the fucking Irate Gamer coming out of obscurity. I mean, sure, he was making videos, but who's been watching Irate Gamer? And he did a video about, he did a parody of Kickstarter, and it was actually pretty funny, you know. And I think it was like him trolling, but this time he was on the right side of the fence, you know, like for so many years people were like, Irate Gamer sucks, he has to be banished for eternity because he ripped off the Angry Video Game Nerd, and there's a lot of people who ripped him off, but you know, obviously Irate Gamer did very directly with the same games, and but come on, that has been like years ago, and I'm not saying, you know, don't forget, but forgive, you know. And I think that was actually kind of cool. So the Irate Gamer now has gotten some bro points, and fucking Angry Video Game Nerd is losing face, you know, like, will he be able to recover? Will he come back in the same way? Because he also seems to be tired of the Angry Video Game Nerd, because now every time I see him, he's just like, just over the top saying poo and pa and whatever, and he's like slowly becoming a parody of himself. But I don't know, like, if you think differently, tell me, you know. And of course we have Pat the NES Punk supporting that, and I don't like Pat the NES Punk. I really don't. He just feels, he just feels like, I'm so much into Nintendo, look at my NES collection. And like you said, oh, you're just jealous, whatever. Yeah, it's pretty cool to have a collection like that, but, and you know, and I don't want to take away any success from him, but he just seems like kind of like he weaseled himself into success. I don't know, like, he was like, hey, Angry Video Game Nerd, look, I have also NES games. And it's like, what is so great about NES games, you know? If somebody can tell me what's so great about, I had an NES. I had the classics. I played them. I enjoyed them. The NES was great. But you know what? The Sega Genesis was great. Even I didn't even own one. My friend owned one. But we had a blast playing the Sega Genesis. And the C64 was great. And the PC was great, you know? But people don't talk about these. I mean, people barely talk about the Sega games. You know, that's why I like channels like we have AJ Rosa and we have Jared Terrifying talking about some fucking Sega games, you know, not just Sega Genesis, but Master System and Sega Saturn and 32X, you know, and Dreamcast games. We need to talk more about these games. You have to talk also about, you know, I'm going to make more reviews, you know, I always said that I'm going to make more reviews, you know, I really am, you know, I'm just, right now, I just don't have too much time. Barely time to do this Beastcast, and but there is going to be more videos out there because there's just so many reviews of the fucking Nintendo games, and you know, we get it, you know, it was a cool time, so good games, I played the shit out of them, you know, but you know, the Angry Video Game Nerd you know, he used to be known as the angry Nintendo nerd, and then he changed his name because he was afraid Nintendo would give him problems, or maybe they gave him problems. He's still called like that. That's his YouTube name, James Nintendo Nerd. But, you know, he's been saying, I'm the angry video game nerd, and I do this and this game. Like, in his full intro song, he says, I'm the Atari Sega nerd and stuff like that. I'm like, how many fucking Atari games or Sega games or whatever games did he play in a review? How many C64 games? The only two C64 games that come to mind is the Transformers game and the C64 game, and where he then also played the Famicom game and the Superman C64 game. And I'm not saying he should play, because it's probably more fun when he plays games that relate to his passion, to his memory. And obviously, he's, you know, most his biggest collection is his NES game collection, so I understand him doing that. But then you have other players, and then, look, I did an NES game that hasn't been reviewed before. I mean, how long will it be till every NES game, including every pirated fucking game, has been reviewed in some shape or form? Like, it's ridiculous. Seriously, like they will just have to... Yes, they're making... Some people are making new NES games, but the only one I can think of that could be reviewed in any shape or form that would make it interesting is... what is it? Battle Kid? And honestly, it's pretty cool that there's a new NES game out there, like Battle Kid. But it just looks like a better version of I Wanna Be the Guy, and a more playable one on a NES. And also has, of course, it's very much like Mega Man in a way, and some other games. And it does look cool. But I'm like, I don't know. Is it like... I don't know, like... Why not make something more interesting? Like, it's an original game, but it's like, you know, I don't know, like, I don't know, like, something else, you know. But then again, what do I know, you know? I haven't played it yet, so I maybe should give it a shot, you know, maybe, you know, scrunch some money together and get the thing and play it on my Retron 3, but I might have fucked up my Retron 3, so I might need to get a new one. And yes, I'm still going to get a Retron 3, I think. Unless they release a Retron 4, which has also Atari games on it, or Master System games, or something. They should make, like, a Retron Ultra and just have... I remember, like, fucking Classic Game Room's review of the Retron 3, and he said, you know, there should be more games added to that. And he added a bunch of games and said, you know, like, it's just, like, impossible how you could, like, combine a bunch of these consoles. But still, I mean, you know, how many could you combine? Then again, I've been fucking around. It's over an hour. I'm going to throw in a song. Till the next time, dear listener, and to the Death Mug of Doom, and talk to you later.